It's with a heavy heart that I welcome you to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And this is going to be the last issue of 1963 coverage, because there's no annual to go along with this, man. But first, a little business.
Yes, you can find my work. You can find my work on patreon.com/JimRugg. I post a lot of art, original art, process, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff, and I post a lot of my out-of-print mini-comics and zines. What you see here is Rambo 3.5, won the SPX Outstanding Mini-Comic the year that it came out, and it kind of plugs the gap between Rambo, the movie, 3 and 4.
Here's how you could date it, too, man, because, like, Jenna Jameson is the porn star that's referenced in it.
Exactly. So you can find that at patreon.com/JimRugg.
Red Room Issue 1, available for pre-order as we speak. Thousands of them have been reserved as of this moment. We're going for tens of thousands of pre-orders. Like, let's see if we can make that shit happen, see how big the reach of the kayfabe audience is. First issue is going to be self-contained. They're all self-contained. First issue is going to be 64 pages. And if you want to check those pages out ahead of time, patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 gets you the archive there. You could read issue 1. You could read issue 2 as of this recording. Issue 3 is being serialized every Tuesday. Now, Jimmy, 1963, book 6, The Tomorrow Syndicate. All of those characters that we've established during the first batch of videos we've done, it's all coming to a head in this issue here.
Yeah, think Avengers, think Justice League. You know, the titles, the book titles that would combine the most popular characters from these publishing companies, and that's what you got here, a super team.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Justice League, because we've been talking about the Marvel element of the 1963 thing. But, like, this lettering right here, this is a DC Comics Silver Age staple where you would get all the characters' names and, like, that little scroll roster thing.
There's no credited letterer this issue. It makes me wonder if it's Dave Gibbons pulling the double duty on the inking and lettering.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I recognize his lettering. And they're going to the main complex, the secret headquarters. Got to go through the nostril of George Washington to get there on Mount Rushmore.
Yes, I like this headquarters. I like the location. Tad impractical, you know. You're probably, if there's a threat in New York or somewhere, you're a little bit out of the way, but nevertheless, pretty cool.
That's what their space vehicles are for. So this issue is to get all those characters that we established earlier. Let's get them all in the mix and see how they interact with one another, and it's real fun. You see N-Man's dynamic with
Hypernaut.
Yes, and just the way he feels about the planet from Mystery Incorporated. It's a Hulk versus Thing.
Yeah,
Steve said I love you, but with all the H-Man stuff you talk about, like, this is the Hulk Thing dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. Some really fun drawing, too. Starting with panel one, I think USA, like, flipping into the compound. Very small, you can easily miss it. That's really fun. But then N-Man's reflection in Hypernaut's, like, sphere head thing. Cool detail. And there's quite a few of those. You know, like this group shot, everybody's kind of moving around and animated. Really like that part.
Yeah, and like the Marvel Comics, like, Fury, he's not a part of the Avengers, man, so they get him in here a little bit, and he'll factor in a touch later when he sees all the superheroes heading out of the city. How about that pose, man? That's a good one. How about the cutaway?
I love the cutaways.
Rick Veitch is a master at the cutaway, man.
Such a fun panel, and such a fun, you know, like, I just think fun comics when I see the cutaways. Especially the headquarters shots. You used to see those in, like, Silver Age Marvels, or the Batcave in DC, or the Fortress of Solitude. Like, any of those things that showed, like, the kind of inner diagrammatic parts. Always loved that. Feels like Silver Age staple, that kind of thing. We should have more cutaways.
Jim, there's a little bit of... am I getting ahead of myself? There's a little bit of radiation or something in Manhattan that
comes
later?
Yeah, not getting ahead of yourself at all. That's exactly what's going on. Well, they start with the weapons, but those weapons are giving off some kind of radiation, and that's what they trace back to Manhattan. It's the high-tech weapons that Fury got from Voidoid.
This is so good, because this is our allusions to, like, Rob Liefeld guns and stuff.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes. I love their flying ship. Like, once they decide they're gonna take off, they have these little green capsules, and like you can see it really good in this shot, the perspective of this ship. I think that's really cool. And even the characterization of like N-Man is this big dude. So you can see he's all like curled, his knees are up against this chest to fit into that little capsule. I think that's a cool vehicle design.
So there's some radiation going down in Manhattan, some stuff that's very atypical. They got to check it out. Going below the city streets. They shrink up, and this is so cool. This is like that great comic book science stuff of the Silver Age. They shrink up so much that they start to fall in between the molecules of the sidewalk. That's what you're looking at right there.
Exactly. That's a fun piece.
And they end up in the sort of threshold of Mystery Incorporated's building. Man, you could see that there's been some issues there. Maybe some of the scuffle from issue one of 1963. Anyhow.
Exactly, yes.
Mystery Incorporated, no longer with us, but our Avengers crew showing up to assess the situation.
Yeah, to figure out, like, what happened to them. This is part of the Mystery Mile, so it's a little bit outside of the Mystery Inc. headquarters, but once they see the insignia, they realize that's where they're at. And, by the way, N-Man has to get his shots in with the planet, like, oh, is this what the planet works out with?
Yeah.
Lifting it up with one hand.
It was established in that first issue. There was that sort of porthole that can go to other dimensions, and there was that guy that came through, was walking backwards, and it was discovered that was just like a time paradox. You were watching something happen in rewind mode rather than this guy just doing like a moonwalk.
Yeah, and good that Rick Veitch handled both of these stories, because he can pull in some of the same visual motifs that we saw in Mystery Incorporated.
Yeah.
That collage, that Kirby collage homage.
You almost can't wait for them to just hop in there and see what the heck happens, right?
You know what? Go back one page. It's worth calling out the ad, because this is famous ad layouts there, usually for an artist and maybe even Norman Rockwell sitting at the top of it in some cases. In this case, it's Rick Veitch plugging his self-published Roar and Rick's Rare Bit Fiends, which is a Dream Comics. But nice to see this stuff. And I like that the artists who create this series get to plug their stuff throughout. You know, one of the benefits of Image and creator-owned comics, we may take that for granted at this point. Back in the day, to be able to populate the comics you're drawing with ads for the comics you're publishing, not to be taken for granted.
And you know what? Good on these guys, because the back-end work that
right.
Bissett and Veitch did on these issues, they deserve some plugs.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you're a fan of this comic, you should want to know about this. You know, if you're enjoying this comic, there's a good chance you're going to enjoy other Rick Veitch comics. It's kind of weird that this isn't the norm.
Right. All right, man, we're entering our, I was going to say Shimmering Zone, but that's a specific N-Man
right.
Piece.
Yeah, I forget what this portal was called.
It's called Alternity or something.
Yeah, maybe. It had some kind of weird name. But bottom line is they're intersecting through these different realities. It reminds me of like Grimjack and Sinosure. But they're going through these different realities and seeing different heroes, which is kind of cool. This is probably your nod to something like Justice League nodding to Justice Society. You know, as they're passing like different iterations of these super teams.
It's all of that stuff. It's that. It's the Earth 2,
sure.
Where the Justice League, there's like that bad guy, Justice League. We have our young version of USA. We have our young version of Fury. We saw just a cameo appearance of this Golden Age Fury in that issue. Really sells it good on like the kind of boyish interpretation of young USA.
Yes. Yeah, it's fun to see those two versions meeting each other, meeting up, shaking hands. And this feels like Alan Moore, in my guess, is that the DC kind of like all these alternative Earths, probably closer to Alan Moore's, near and dear to his heart, wrote lots of Superman stories and DC kind of stories. I feel like that's what's coming through here.
There's so much good spot-on stuff, too, like this kind of human Hypernaut guy, same color scheme as... you know, the Hypernaut that we know. And if you got Golden Age, you got to have your, like, patriotic crew, you know? That's important.
Yeah, that World War II era American superheroes.
And I guess this is, like, our Legion of Superheroes type stuff. These kind of generic... like, when you have a team of 1,000 characters... your bouncing boy costume ain't gonna be that interesting looking. You know, it's gonna be this kind of.
It reminds me of some shapes. The Brennan McCarthy character. I can't remember his name.
Paradox.
Yes.
Paradax.
Paradax. Reminds me of Paradax a little bit, that character design.
Yeah, sure. It's the colors, too. This is like a Brendan McCarthy color palette, man.
Yeah, I like all the little arrows pointing in different directions that you might go, like black holes, mystic realms, parallel worlds. It's very fun. It's very in line with superhero history.
Look at these Kirby janitors.
Yeah, part watcher, part janitor.
All right, man. They're going through that alternity space, and when they spit back out into this version of Earth, some things have changed.
Yeah, something is not right with Mount Rushmore headquarters.
Yes, which now adorns the heads of Al Capone, John Wilkes Booth, Benedict Arnold, and Billy the Kid.
That's a weird one, right? Billy the Kid.
I guess you couldn't think of another good American villain.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. It's just a funny collection of villains.
This is a fun little sequence because now we're going to get to see the villainous version. This is where you get the Earth 2, the bad Justice League characters, man. So here's your planet that's the bad guy planet. A lot of Russian.
By the way, your wall hangings are Genghis Khan and Hitler. What in tarnation?
You get your N-Man planet battle, but it's not exactly that.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters going on here. I mean, we've seen it throughout 1963. It's one of the charms of this series, but man, it's on display, this issue.
Does this image of Hypernaut, like, isn't there something in Ronin where there's a big face like this and it's hatched very similarly?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
On a TV screen?
It looked so familiar and I didn't make that connection until you said it, but yeah, I think that's exactly where I know it from.
And it's like, are those wires in the head or is that like maggots?
I love it. It's a brain texture at a glance from a distance, you know, out of the corner of your eye, and then you look closer and right, what are we seeing there?
Yeah, mealworms. So the idea was they all faced the villainous version of themselves, except for Hypernaut. So you flip the page, and boom, there's your villainous.
Love the scale Hypernaut. Of them evading its pinchers, because when you look up there and see how tiny it is, and then that panel of you can see their car big enough, it makes those pinchers so big you can't even see them all in one panel.
Right, and I mean that's Mount Rushmore right there, man. So
yeah, that's a great. A great Hypernaut.
They're not going to be in that alternate reality for too long. They're going to split.
Yeah, they find like a black hole opens up in the middle of his forehead, and that's what they travel through.
So then we have to visit, you know, Commandy issue 1. What caused this? I don't know. And you see the newspaper, Cuban Missile Crisis, Soviets call Kennedy's bluff. And here we are, that fateful day. But things are still a little different. It's not exactly the 1963 that we know in our time span.
Yeah, not by any stretch. When we get the close-up, you realize it's really a different world. Bugs crawling out of people's eyes.
with this, like, they love you bimbo thing, with the president with the little bear, that has to be a little bit of cutting promos on Ronald Reagan, right? The Bonzo movies?
Maybe. I guess.
He's the only other president that was in something with, it was a monkey, not a bear.
Look at the Lee Harvey Oswald masks on bystanders.
Yeah, all of them. And then you have your, like, Nazi assassins with, like, crazy garb on.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And then this is kind of the...
This is the money shot.
Yes. Possibly of this whole series. I mean... You know, we mentioned a second ago about the ads and how, like, the creator ownership changes that were in the air. And then let's celebrate that by having a bunch of these creator-owned characters on display as the 63 characters are shooting through these parallel worlds and universes.
We showed this issue off on a Wizard episode. And then I sat there and was like, oh, there's that. So this will be your opportunity, man. Start from the top. Call them out.
I actually don't know that. Is that Art Adams?
No, no, no. That's Colleen Duran's A Distant Soil.
Ah, gotcha. All right. Bizarre Heroes, Don Simpson. Which direction are we going? Cerebus and Dave Sims. Eddie Campbell and Bacchus, The God of Wine.
Directly below.
Chester Brown doing Autobio. Chester Brown doing Chester Brown.
Yeah.
Bob Burns, Flaming Carrot. We see Scott McCloud, just a little bit of Scott McCloud from Understanding Comics. True Man by Rick Veitch. So another Rick Veitch plug in there. Normal Man, Jim Valentino, the guy kind of responsible for Image doing 1963. Marv from Sin City, Frank Miller, Sin City. Michael T. Gilbert's Mr. Monster. Larry Marder's Bean World. I'll be ahead of you. You point at the ones I'm calling out.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim Woodring's Frank. Great comic. One that we need to look at on here probably in greater depth. Frank Miller and Dave Gibbons teaming up for Martha Washington. Might be Gimme Liberty at this point. I think maybe only one series out at this time. And Steve Bissett, fellow 1963 co-creator with his self-published gem, Tyrant.
How cool, right?
Yeah, I love this. And it was really awesome at the time because I probably couldn't have named most of these. And since then I have. But it gave me that idea of, like, there's a lot more out there. Start digging.
Some of the 1963-ites who have created these pages, these comics, Steve Bissett, Rick Veitch, they'll pop through. Jim Valentino, they'll pop through and check out the videos and stuff. One question I have. Now, I know this is a paste-up for sure. Are any of these original pieces for the spread? I don't recognize all of these images as being in the other works, except for this Frank Miller piece. So that's a question I have.
Yeah, I'd be curious about that too.
I'm not
because
saying
it does look like the artist's hands. You know, you look at some of this stuff that are pretty distinct. The Eddie Campbell Bacchus, the most of them are very distinct, I think, to the artist. So it's possible these artists did it. You know, there were a lot of camaraderie amongst cartoonists, but possibly paste-ups. Who knows?
Yeah.
Let us know, guys. That is a good question. I mean, imagine what the original art to this spread looks like.
Yeah. I'm not saying that it's on the board. Because how is Don Simpson going to draw all that, that small? Like, of course, but I'm just curious if their original drawings meant for this, with the exception of the Frank Miller.
That's a very awesome spread, no doubt.
Yeah. And they pick their poison. They go through a specific porthole, and this is where the heartbreak begins for me, James. Because they've entered into a new world where there are overpasses, there are bombed out cars on cinder blocks. The coloring looks different for some reason, Jim.
Yeah, this is the heartbreaking part. As good as the 1963 series is up to this point, you realize in this moment, it's a setup. It's part of a bigger story that we're telling. And where are they, Ed? What world have they entered?
1993, modern day, the Image universe.
I need to read this whole story. It's so sad that this did not reach conclusion, but that is what you're seeing. That's the color that you're talking about is, you know, it's not just a different comics world within the 1963 universe. It's a whole different paradigm. And that color, of course, the digital color revolution of those early Image comics. It's cool to see, I guess, Rick Veitch doing this coloring.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is probably the first color he ever did on the computer. And you could see the trials and tribulations of that, man. You see some cutoff stuff there where he's doing like the radial blur kind of gimmick, going outside the lines a touch, getting a little bit of the flare lines because it takes you a print job or two to realize like you gotta increase the pixel amount by two.
I love seeing him do this. So much of what we've seen with the digital coloring up to this point would be like Extreme Studios and Wild Storm. And that stuff's fine, but this is a guy who's coming from a very different sensibility. So you see him trying things with like the sky and, and clouds and things in the sky, applying these gradients at different places, like reflections on the ground. There's just a lot of, you know, a very innovative visual artist now trying this different tool to approximate and in some weird ways critique this new direction that comics coloring was going. Man, I wanted a whole book of that kind of thing.
I know. And here we go. We're being reintroduced to a character that we saw in book one.
An archer.
Yeah.
If memory serves.
Yes, sir. You can see the quiver right there.
Wonder if we're going to find out who this is. Does he even have an iPhone?
He's got some of the Mystery Incorporated characters captured in his little box. we see this beefy ass back as he's taking off the mask, and you could see some bows back there. So it's clearly, you know, his craft, his vehicle. And here's the greatest reveal and the biggest heartbreak of 1990s comics.
Even the dialogue feels like it's set up for the heartbreak. This is where things start to get interesting.
And of course, I have chills looking at it, man. Of course, this is Shaft, Rob Liefeld's character from Youngblood. Rick Veitch even doing the little worm hairs at the front of, like, the mask, the little headpiece, the little headgear that those Gambit-type characters were all wearing. The same kind of fiery hair. You see the Image characters in the back there on the TVs, man. Savage Dragon, Spawn, Void, mixed with, you know, Fury. Look at those, like, Rick Veitch is cutting promos. Look at these traps.
Yeah, something's wrong with Shaft's shoulder.
Look at these traps,
it's,
baby.
Muscles on muscles, as sometimes they say.
This is Megaton Man. Like, he learned a couple things looking at Dandy Don Simpson.
This is right before the WWF goes to steroid trials.
Right.
Yeah, it's incredible. Here's something weird. No images of Cyberforce in the background. No mention of Cyberforce in the plugs there. Somebody throwing shade towards Top Cow with this page.
Yeah, interesting.
They're still part of the fold at this time. It's I don't know why they're absent. It's a little bit conspicuous in their absence.
So here's what they're hawking in the Arrow. Get down to your corner store, blah blah blah. Reserve your copy of the Double Image 80-page giant to witness our superhuman 1963 stalwarts in their struggle with Spawn, Wildcats, Shadowhawk, Youngblood, Savage Dragon, and Supreme. And I think it was established that what was going to happen was Rick Veitch and, like, Bissett and those guys were going to draw the 1963 characters. Jim Lee was going to be the guy drawing the modern-day Image characters.
Yeah, I would love to see it. And just, I can't even imagine exactly what Alan Moore had in mind story-wise. Like, all of it is a mystery that... It's just heartbreaking to see Shaft saying this is when it gets interesting, because it sure does. I enjoyed 1963 up to this point. It's really a cool cast of characters, and now suddenly you're going to drop them into the meat grinder of the early 90s Image universe? Wow. That sounds like exactly what I want to read. How does this not happen?
This is one of those great examples, and people hit us up with suggestions for the videos and stuff, and I'm talking about production things. And you know what? Sounds like a lot of work. The more pieces to the machine that you bring into this situation, the less incentive there's almost to do it. Like it's almost too much, you know? And as they bring these characters to the modern day, now you got to deal with the copyright stuff with all of those guys. And you think McFarlane's going to want Spawn to look like a punk at all? We know how proprietary Eric Larson is with his Savage Dragon. It looks good on paper. Like, literally looks good on paper for the creatives involved. I think it would have been a fucking nightmare, probably every step of the way.
It very well may have. I don't know that I've ever heard a story about what exactly went wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I know there are stories of Moore having some pages written, and I don't know if it just didn't get drawn, if that was like, you know, hey, Jim Lee, draw the first batch, and I'll keep writing, or I don't know. There wasn't like a big public blow-up as to like, what happened? It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those mysteries, and comics are full of these things where you find ads for comics. Frank Miller's Doctor Strange, you know, ads ran in Marvel Comics, but no comic. There's lots of those stories, and sometimes you see the pages. Jim Lee with Nick Fury Punisher graphic novel, you know, and you can find some pages for this stuff, but comics are kind of riddled with these what-if projects.
Let's take a look at a couple Golden Age covers to round things out, and then the craziest Steve Bissett ad I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, these are fun. Valentino there. I'm guessing Tomorrow Syndicate is Rick Veitch. I don't see a signature for sure, but that's my guess. A giant mole. That thing's pretty fun. It's
yeah.
Kind of gross.
Like a pinky mouse.
Yeah.
Real nasty.
Yeah, that modern mystery comics is cool. The Valentino piece, that's your Golden Age set of the 63 characters, which are probably like, I don't know, 39.
Yeah.
Dandy Don Simpson looks like with the inks there. I'm going to assume that's Dandy Don.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dr. Dandy Don, as he's known now. And, of course, you need the lady in the bondage. And this is where you get, like, your old Hypernaut and your old Furies and all that stuff. Man, this is rounding out the universe. And then we got a Melinda Gebbie gimmick here, where she's doing what she perceives to be her Wally Wood kind of pastiche.
Yeah, the pinups are they're nice. I think every issue had 3 pinups in it.
Yeah.
Pretty nice little bonus material, especially when you put together 6 issues worth of them. And then Sturdy Steve grows own tail. Fun ad. I love Tyrant. We've talked about that on Wizard videos. I don't think we've done a dedicated Tyrant video.
We will.
But that was one of those early creator-owned series that just blew my mind. You know, planted the ideas of self-publishing, of being able to control the entire package, was just a huge piece for me. It was one of the few comics that I could show my art teachers, and they had nothing critical to say.
Yeah, and once again, one of the great kind of unfinished comics projects, because the way that thing was being sold was you're going to get the full life story of this Tyrannosaurus Rex from birth to death, and I think the little fucker popped out the egg issue 3?
Yes. Yeah, we were going to get a good story of that T-Rex. Heavily researched. Again, we'll dig into that in a separate episode, but definitely a comic that I hold near and dear to my heart. Ed, do you know anything about this ad?
I don't. Like, this puzzled me so much. You know, 1963 and a half, Paul Mavridis, Alex Cox, Dick Rude. But coming from Kitchen Sink Press, like, I don't know what I'm looking at all. There was text stuff.
There's this panel, you know, where we even get a plug for this, but I don't know what it is either. I've never seen it. I can't tell you if this is a real comic book or, you know, total kayfabe.
Mavridi's name is referenced in the text stuff, but I have to be in a particular mindset to read all of that. Affable Owl, where
yes.
He uses D's to begin every word and every sentence for a whole paragraphs, and I didn't dig deep into it, so hopefully somebody out there can illuminate this for us a touch.
That's an aggressive ad, the comic they don't want you to read, so much so that I don't know if it exists. Mission accomplished, guys.
Super fun. It's with a heavy heart that we have to say that this is our last 1963 issue, unless some miracle annual shows up in our doorstep or something like that at some point in the future.
It's an incredible series. You know, like as a historic comic, it was really amazing whenever it came out. I feel like it's equally so now. I love these comics that hold up. You know, 30 years later, they're still a revelation to look into, and maybe even more interesting now with history's perspective on top of it. It's shocking to think that it's half of a kind of a concept, that we only end up with this 1963 half, but it's still just a remarkable series. Production, a lot of unique characters created by 3 giants of comics history. So pretty great. And from a time period that speculator boom, kind of the tail end of the speculator boom, so at least a lot of these were printed. You know, we're not going to get a reprint or a collection anytime soon, but you can still track down most of these comics.
Well said, man. I think that's a good place to leave it. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Jim, what you got?
Patreon.com/JimRug. You can find original art, process posts, Q&As, and some of my out-of-print mini-comics and zines. Patreon.com/JimRug.
Red Room is hitting the stores in May. Pre-order your copies today. Get your stores on the train to order a bunch of copies as well. If you want to read the comics right at this moment, you could hit up my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor. 2 issues are up there. $3 for the archive. New strips every Tuesday.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. May will be here before you know it. So subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter. Links below this video. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give him one more set of marching orders. We're going to be on our way, dude.
Read more comics.